Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Buchanan Report, this 11th day of June 2019. My name is Ivan Buchanan, and I am your host and my co-host, plural, as always, Ron Hanks and Rhonda Moon Lane. If you're joining us for the first time, our call-in number is 347-857-1710. Again, that number, 347-857-1710. And for those of you that do call in, try to watch the language. If you could, we'll try to keep you as clean as we can. Our guest tonight, take two, is whistleblower Diane Suter with updates on her case that she just won. But before we get to our guest, I want to remind everyone our website is thebuchananreport.com, thebuchananreport.com, where a lot of information, a lot of links there. So go there, check it out. Also, Facebook page, or excuse me, group. Well, we got a page too, the Buchanan Report, but we also have a Facebook group called VA Corruption by the Buchanan Report, where we're putting all of our veterans news alerts on now. So go there and join it and stay up to date on what's going on. That's it for me. I know Rhonda, she's got nothing to contribute tonight. She's sloughing, so.
Actually, you're not building a new soapbox?
Oh, I knew it. I knew it.
Because I knew you were going to do that. And then I remembered I actually had saved something for tonight. So, who knows?
Wait a minute. You said you didn't have nothing. So I think we're just going to shut you down and bypass you.
Okay, fine. Go ahead, Ron.
When you two are done arguing, let me know.
Go ahead, Rhonda, spit it out. Go ahead.
So, June 11th. Anybody know what happened on this day? I do. I got a whole list of it.
June 11th.
1990, the Supreme Court overturned the Flag Protection Act of 1989.
The what?
Oh, the burning.
Yes, the flag, yes, 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court overturns the Flag Protection Act. That's when they decided it's okay to burn the American flag. Cash grants distributed from the American Legion Emergency Fund exceeded $1 million. John Wayne died in 1979. 1986, the teen comedy, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, was released. Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. I've got a couple of things. Our local paper here. Pearl Harbor, they're still doing their ongoing thing, trying to identify all the people that got killed during Pearl Harbor. And they identified another one. Has to be a Colorado boy. He was a baker on the Oklahoma. And he has been identified and returned home. So that's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
It's taking them a while, but they're starting to get it knocked down.
Yeah.
Have you received, Rhonda, have you received that folder from the VA of concerning the Mission Act?
No, I have not yet.
It's like a fold-out brochure.
Uh-huh.
Doing it. And also our local paper here, yeah, the Health and Wellness section, did an article on it. And I'm kind of, I don't know, in the middle. I'm leery, and then I'm seeing that maybe this could be good because the choice program hasn't worked that well for a lot of people.
No, it hasn't. Yep.
Well, I'm starting to kind of, from this article, understand why some of it didn't. I mean, it doesn't help that the government's not paying their bills.
But
a lot of people were walking into, like, emergency services and whatnot, and throwing down their choice card, trying to treat it like it was a Medicare card.
Yeah, insurance, and it's not.
And, it's not. People wind up having to pay for it, and then they scream and gripe. But
right.
This Mission Act, according to what they're claiming, includes free access to urgent care facility when a veteran can't get in to see a primary care doctor or if a small injury or illness occurs after hours.
Yes.
And the whole idea is to keep the veterans out of the emergency department when possible. So if they'll still pay their bills, maybe this is a work. I don't know.
I've been reading up on it, and I thought the same thing you did. I was leery. But the wording of it, emergency room, like the wording they use as a prudent lay person. So if you have chest pain and there is a closer hospital than the VA, prudent lay person would go to that emergency room, right?
Yes.
Well, they've been denying those bills for years, and the same wording is in the new Mission Act for the urgent care.
So the same thing remains. It remains to be seen whether or not it's going to work.
Yes. Yes.
So we're right back.
Yeah, a lot of veterans are going to get their credit screwed up is what's going to happen. Rhonda, take a look at your IM, please.
Feel like one of the Three Stooges, plant your foot and run around in a circle going whoop, 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 whoop. Also, Rhonda, a thing I ran across on Facebook here last week.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Battle Buddies. Have you heard of them?
I have not.
They are a organization that gives free puppies to veterans in need. They didn't have any more detail than that. I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
But the page that was posted, it came from Veteran to Veteran Info, which is a site that I'm registered with.
Yeah.
It came from News4 in San Antonio.com.
Do they take kids?
Well, no, I don't think so.
We don't want the kids.
I ain't giving up to grandkids. No, I'm talking about kids.
No. They're too hard to potty train.
That's about all my kids are.
But that's what it's called. I took note of it because one of our members had posted it on there, and I'd never heard of it. So another source for service dogs.
Exactly. We have quite a few of them, but, you know, they're all small groups, and they can only serve so many veterans. So the more we have, the better off we are.
Well, there's quite a bit of training.
There's always been. Well, that brings up one question that I've always had, and I've never asked the question in all the years, you know, since we started reporting. You know, you've got comfort dogs and you've got, you know, service dogs. What is the ratio, number one, to service dogs and comfort dogs? And it would seem to me, and I don't know the answer, I'm asking a question. It seems to me that there would be more call for comfort dogs than service dogs. And if that be the case, with all the animals that are, you know, in shelters, you know, is that a possible source? Does anybody know anything about what I'm speaking
about? It is for some people. That one guy, I can't remember his name, that we interviewed, that's where his dog came from.
A lot of the service dogs come from there. Our local Humane Society trains service dogs for veterans.
Yeah, but can a lot of veterans, though, get away without an actual trained service dog and a comfort dog would serve just as well?
Pretty much they have to have the same training. They have to be able to be in a public situation and under control of the handler at all times.
The reason why I asked that question is because you're not training the dog, except for maybe in Ron's circumstance, to go get a beer out of the refrigerator, you know. But
Right.
Of course, Frank can't do that. It's a little dachshund. His legs ain't tall enough, you know, or I'm sure Ron would have taught him how to get a beer. But,
well, you can't hand him an empty either because he wants to take out the dregs. And yeah, he's worse than
yeah.
I am.
And
yeah.
service dogs or comfort dogs don't have the same protection service dogs do. They can go
no.
a lot of places, but they can't go in a lot of other places. There is a difference.
The biggest
yeah, but an establishment,
the...
it's illegal for them to ask, you know, for proof that it is a service dog.
Exactly, and that's one of the biggest problems with the program.
Yeah, that and the fact that it's been abused enormously.
Yes,
whether
because they can't ask.
Yeah, whether it's a service dog or a comfort dog. Comfort dogs are probably the worst part of it. Because a true service dog, in a sense, is a comfort dog.
Oh, yeah.
But
when
you can go
I am
online.
Upset,
yeah.
Tinker
or,
is
know,
my best friend.
Yeah. Become
well, that's how I got
you're
away with
Kelvin
for
some
years.
Kind of a seizure, yeah. But you can go online and buy the equipment to put on the dog and claim, oh, this is a comfort dog. It has to be with me.
Tinker is a service dog, but you know what? The equipment on Amazon is way cheaper than the equipment from the actual companies. So
yeah.
even I use that.
But it's been abused to the point to where people are turning against it, I guess is the
yes.
best way to put it.
When you have to fly with a duck
yep.
sitting next to you, like,
yeah.
you can see why.
Or a miniature pony. You know, I mean, go on.
Or a goldfish.
I'm waiting. Yeah. I'm waiting for the emu now, you know, Liberty Mutual.
Yeah, right.
Well, now you said it, son, but he's going to do it.
How about an elephant? <I'm> on.
Yeah,
but
try getting that on the plane.
Yeah. If this organization is truly providing some dogs to people, I mean, any one of them that we run across, I don't care if they only get out 5 or 6 a year. It helps.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, why do you?
I agree. And I always save these. Whenever I see somebody wants one, I would tell everybody, go to your local Humane Society, your
yeah.
local animal control, because there are a lot of people there that can help you find the appropriate training for a service
yeah.
dog.
Well, that guy's name we had, what was his dog? Riley? Was that right?
I can't remember. Django. We've had Django. We've had 3 or 4
there,
of them on.
Yeah, Django. We interviewed
you remember
him.
All that?
His dog came from the shelter.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. So, anyway. That's all I had for now.
All right. We're going to go straight back to me because we're not going to take a break tonight. Our guest tonight is whistleblower Diane Suter. She was a registered nurse with Tucson VA system. She claimed a manager told her to falsify wait times, which was verified by the Office of Inspector General. She also accused the VA of discrimination and filed a complaint with the EEOC. She was a nurse for 17 years, but due to several disabilities, she could no longer take on the heavy load, which is like 1,500 patients. Who would even imagine that? The VA failed
wow.
to accommodate her. Yeah, I know. Like, when I saw that number, I'm like,
1,500
okay.
patients at one time?
That for a floor nurse.
Wow.
So since she couldn't fulfill the requirements, that didn't mean she can't be a nurse. We have home-based care. She asked to be transferred, but they told her there was no openings that met her qualifications, and then they removed her from federal service. So she actually won her case. Diane, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great. So tell us what's gone on since we've talked to you last.
Okay. That,
I know
that
you
was
won your case.
That was a bad number. That 1,500 wasn't floor nursing.
Okay.
That 1,500 was the panel size that I was a primary care nurse, a PAC nurse for.
Oh, okay.
And the physician that I had, his availability for appointments was half of what all the other doctors was, because he spent half of his time seeing patients with residents, and they were patients from anywhere in the country who were admitted and were being seen post-hospitalization. So his appointment availability was almost nothing.
I was going to say, doesn't a normal doctor at the VA sees like a patient every 15 minutes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And some of them more often. They try to have a couple of slots open for that the nurse can bring in a patient and see him and do all the triaging and just bring the doctor in for a problem focus. Say, for instance, I get a patient who calls me and his ears are draining and
right.
he's got a fever. Well, if the doctor takes a look in his ears, he can order antibiotics and this guy doesn't have to go to the ER. That will take him
right.
5 minutes if I see the patient first.
Exactly.
So it increases the number of appointment slots that he can have. This doctor, however, was very reluctant to see anything extra and didn't want to hear about any problems and just was really a slough off. So it made it doubly more difficult. But and the thing was, when I went down to that clinic, I was put there on an accommodation where I was going to be working with two doctors who were primarily administrative, and their panel was much smaller. I had never worked in the clinics before. I had worked in the ER at UMC in a trauma unit. I'd done triage there, but you're triaging patients who are in front of you. They're coming in, you see them, you see what's going
right.
on with them. And the other thing is, I was not real computer literate in the fact that I could not type 50 words a minute. And when you're talking to a patient on the phone and you're supposed to be typing everything they say and everything you say back to them, and you're told that you've got less than 5 minutes per patient per phone call, and you're getting 40 to 50 phone calls a day in addition to the patients who you're seeing and the patients who walk in and the patients who maybe they're to see a specialist, they're coming from another VA, and they're having a low blood sugar problem. So somebody from the front comes back and says, can you help me? And I drop what I'm doing and help them. You know, it was just the load was what just too heavy, and I could not handle it. And I told them I couldn't handle it, and I wanted something else.
Right.
Well,
and there should be a problem
here
with that.
What specifically were you a whistleblower about?
What I was a whistleblower about was, in the process of being working for this doctor, my manager came to me and was yelling at me because the doctors were getting bonuses and the VA was getting bonuses and the administrator was getting bonuses and the supervisors were getting bonuses based on what they called metrics. These metrics were based on, number one, they took money away if patients went to the ER. They took money away if it took longer than 2 weeks to get a patient seen when the patient called and needed to be seen for something urgent and asked for an appointment and you couldn't get them in within 2 weeks. And that 2 weeks with this doctor was impossible. His appointments were 3 months out. And even though I could use my nursing appointments and use any urgent appointments that he had slots open, I couldn't get him in. And I told her I couldn't. And she said, well, nobody can get that many patients seen within 2 weeks, but we have to make it look like that. And she showed me how to go into the computer and change it around so that the numbers looked like we were getting them within 2 weeks, but the patients weren't actually getting seen within 2 weeks. And
but
that's
actually,
what I
the
told
patients weren't, a lot of patients weren't being seen, therefore the quality of care went to, for many patients, to zero, correct?
Right. I mean, they patients were lucky if they got seen. I mean, for urgent care problems, if they got seen within 2 weeks, they were very fortunate. The most of them, I would actually advise them to go to the ER because they couldn't get them in because it was the only way that I could not give them false appointments the way she was telling me to do. And then if patients come in with a false appointment, they might travel 50 miles to get there, and they're sitting out in the waiting room, and it's noon all of a sudden, and they come up to the desk, and they say, well, my appointment was an hour ago. Where's the doctor? And they go, well, you don't have an appointment today. And the patient gets upset, and the VA police get called. And, of course, the patient looks like a nut because they're going off on the cops. And who gets in trouble for it? It's the VA patient.
So did you testify to all of this in your case?
I did. I did. However, I didn't have patient names. I didn't have dates. I didn't keep those kind of records. I kept as much as I could, but I was really concerned about HIPAA regulations and that I would get in trouble legally about stuff I was taking off of the computer and even mm-hmm. about the retaliation. They found, even after they came in with the OIG and I told them how to find that they were doing this, I said is, patients never call in and get an appointment the next day within 24 hours, never, if they want to be seen. And I said, if you go back in those years and you look and you see when patients called and when their appointment was, and it's within 24 hours, I said, those are the false appointments because what they had us do was go in and make it seem as though the patient called in on the date that we gave them the appointment for. We put that as the requested date.
Do you know if they did that investigation, and if so, what the results were?
Well, I know they brought it to the VA's attention, and the VA was supposed to make all these changes, but I don't think anybody ever followed up.
So
and
nobody
I
was
know
held accountable.
The supervisor that made me do that is still there and still working. The director at that time, by the time I filed my case in court, he took an early retirement and beat feet. The assistant director got a promotion to a director in Hawaii. The head of HR took a retirement. The person who was active in HR in this retaliation against me retired suddenly, you know, so everybody jumped ship and they can't go
okay,
after.
Okay, I have a question here, Ivan, again. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not, my question may sound like I'm trying to give insulation to this on their side, but I'm not. But,
uh-huh.
you know, we've had people on the radio, on the show, and more people have contacted me personally through various means stating, you know, well, here in, you know, New Jersey, here in Las Vegas, and, you know, there are some facilities that don't have these type of problems. Why is it that you have these problems in some and not the other? And not others. Is it because of the population of veterans in that particular community, or is it more than that?
I think it's more than that. I think that there are VA facilities and there are communities that are just plain good communities, and they have good leadership. But a comment that I made to KGN9 News, and I think holds true of all too many government positions, is that you can rise to the level of your incompetence in government because the people that are the most rotten and the most brazen and willing to look the other way are the ones that will climb over everybody else on their way up, and somehow they keep getting promoted and keep getting ahead. And the bad blood in Phoenix is still there. The people who were responsible for what went on in Phoenix didn't get fired.
Where they at?
I went to Phoenix and testified before the Veterans Committee, Veterans Affairs Committee, years ago. I believe it was 2016 or 2017, when McCain and Flake were both there, and the physician who blew the whistle in Phoenix was there testifying before them, and she said, "Nothing has changed here. Nothing."
No. And I blame that on the people investigating, because they let that sit. The head of that was put on paid leave, and he sat there for 2 years getting paid. When he finally walked into court with his lawyer, he said, "You haven't even charged me," and walked out.
I believe that. I ended up having to do the EEOC route because when I went the whistleblower and the retaliation route, you have to have video of them shooting someone in order to prove your case, because nothing else is going to show enough to prove retaliation to the government.
OAWP wasn't around when you did this, correct?
No.
Yes, I don't know if they were or not, but all I know is I didn't get past the first guy that I went to the whistleblower. He had me down as a whistleblower, and then he said that I just didn't have enough evidence to show him. And when he asked me to give him additional evidence, he sent me a letter saying that the additional evidence didn't show enough additional evidence of retaliation. And that letter came before I even sent him the additional information.
Okay, so then let's get to the real issue. Let's get to the real issue then. If you're totally being shut down, you know, by the people that you're dealing with, trying to, you know, make your case, if you will, with them, you know, you're a whistleblower, you're providing all this documentation that they're saying really isn't documentation. What was it in your EEOC case that proved your case, that you were right and they were wrong? And sounds to me like, you know, trying to shove everything under a rug. What was the determining factors that made you win your case?
Okay, where I was able to win my EEOC case was that because they could not fire me for whistleblowing, they went after my job as a nurse. And initially they tried to fire me and say it was because I wasn't a good nurse. And they had a list of all these cases that they said I screwed up on and didn't give me those cases for over a year after I was dismissed from the VA. When I got the cases and I responded to them through my lawyer, case by case, going over why I had done what I had done, suddenly they sent me a letter, and the reason they let me go was because, not because of my nursing care, but because of my sick time. And my sick time was because I could not be found a position because of my disability. I couldn't do any job because of my disability. And that's why I got them on the EEOC case. The judge found that they never even tried to help me find another job. They just blew smoke for a year and a half.
So the reason why you won your EEOC case then has nothing to do with the whistleblowing part.
With the whistleblowing, no. My lawyer finally turned and said, you know, I think I can win this on for you on the whistleblowing. He says, on the EEOC, he said, if we keep going on the whistleblower, we can't do the EEOC case because we can't do both of them, and you're going to end up getting nothing. But I...
Well, why can't you do, why can't you do both? Why can't you do both?
Because the EEOC judge won't hear both, and because the government is the one who decides if you're a whistleblower or if you're retaliated against because of your whistleblowing or not.
Okay, but I still don't understand. They're two separate issues, you know, so
okay.
Why can't you have two separate cases? I still don't understand.
Okay. Well, to tell you honestly, I have spent all of my retirement going after this EEOC case, and I can't afford to go after him again.
Right. So it is available, yes. Then if you wanted to, if you had the funds, it's not a matter of you can't. You have to. It's not a matter of you got to pick one or the other. If you had plenty of money, you could have pursued both avenues. Is that correct?
Yeah, if I was a millionaire, I guess I could. You know, but the government the government has it stacked against you. They have unlimited funds. They have unlimited power. They have unlimited resources. And that's why people say you can't sue the government, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I came out and said, hey, you know, at least here in an EEOC case, I am the first person that I have ever heard of suing the government, winning an EEOC case, and actually walking away with money.
Yeah, I would say that you'd probably be the first that I've heard of, too. I know that there are cases going on right now. That, you know, some cases have just concluded, others are getting ready to conclude. So hopefully there'll be some more, you know, with you there. But, as I think about it, I don't think I know of anyone else that has.
Well, let me tell you this. Even after winning, they came back to me and said, hey, we're going to appeal this thing, and you can sit in court for another couple of years if you want, or you can talk settlement.
Take X amount of dollars.
Yep.
Take X amount of dollars.
X amount of dollars. And so X amount of dollars. I have fought for 5 years. I have not been able to relax for the last 5 years that I have not been working. I have had no enjoyment in life. I mean, I have had no money. We've been living on Social Security, and I am ready to call it quits. I'm not getting a lot, but at least I can pay what I owe now and have enough left that I can buy us a second car, and maybe I can get out and start seeing my friends.
There you go.
The
and it was 5 years. You were in litigation in the EEOC for 5 years?
5 years.
let alone all the hell you went through before that.
That's right. And my husband was ready to stand behind me if I wanted to push on and let them go to appeals. But I just said, you know, I want to see my family. I want to see my mother before she dies. I haven't been able to afford to do that. The thing is, life's still in session. That's right. With this agreement I signed with them, it absolves them of all responsibility in this EEOC case. They're able to wash their hands of it, not admit any guilt, not set any precedent. And the judge gave him a good spanking. He was going to make them put a notice up saying that they had a big EEOC complaint against them and they lost all this money and everything else. And they're just tickled pink. They don't have to do any of that now.
So it's kind of a bittersweet win, then, is what you're saying.
That's right. That's right. You know, I felt the entire time like I was fighting alone. We have so many veterans in this country, and we have so many veterans that are being mistreated, and we have so many veterans that are not getting their due, that with the hundreds of thousands of veterans, you would think that they could get together and fight as a group. I mean, even on all the veteran sites I belong to, there are so few behind the few that are fighting.
Yeah, my take on that, and I've said this before on other shows, that it seems like, you know, social media is wonderful, but, you know, like you take any particular situation, like Fort McClellan, I'm just picking that one. You know, there's multiple groups out there, and it just seems like we're all fighting amongst each other. I don't know if it's, you know, over notoriety or what, but it just seems like nobody, they just can't all come together for whatever the reason is. And in not doing so, they're actually hurting what they're trying to achieve. You know, that's where it appears to me.
I would agree with that. And you know, it's funny, in Arizona, Prescott VA, from what I've heard, people love Prescott. Employees love working there. So why not Phoenix and Tucson? What's different about them?
Right. Well, I know Brandon Coleman, he started out there in Phoenix, and I think he ended up going to Prescott for a short period of time after he settled his case, you know, as a whistleblower with the VA, and now he's with, you know, OAWP, Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, you know.
To the dark side.
Now, is he actually on whistleblower's side? I've heard mixed reviews about him.
Well, so have we, you know. In fact, next week's show, I think, I know from what I've heard, is going to shine a lot of light on Brandon Coleman. There was a case that I'm free to talk about it now. I'm not going to say much because Jay D'Onofrio, just finished his case. And Brandon Coleman testified in that case, and there were emails and this and that and whatever. And so a whole lot of light's going to be shined on the issue that you just brought up here. We've heard a lot. Brandon Coleman, when he originally went to work, contacted us because, you know, he'd been on our show, you know, a few times. Contacted us, wanted to come on, and said give him a couple weeks to get familiar with his new job, and then after that, he just disappeared. You know, I know that he doesn't call his own shots, but, you know, they basically shut him down, apparently, and we have emails, you know, I've sent a couple, and one saying, you know, well, you come on and bring your boss too, you know. I mean, people at that time, a lot of whistleblowers had questions, you know, like one of the questions was, is, you know, is this for real or is it a data mining operation? And the general consensus out there is that, you know, that, you know, the bullet points would be, you know, yes, it is a data mining operation. They're just there to collect information. They're not there for the purpose of helping whistleblowers, which is supposedly why that division was put together. Brandon Coleman has gone to the dark side, although we did have one individual on radio show, I think it's only one, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong, that had some positives to say, you know, about Brandon. But, you know, I find myself talking a little bit more on the negative about Brandon. Don't want to, just because no one will come on. And, you know, and back when he was a whistleblower, what was really kind of agitating to us, and the reason why I'm saying kind of the things that I'm saying now, which a lot of things will come to light next week, but, you know, when he was a whistleblower, he used to contact us behind the scenes all the time without anyone knowing, and we shut up and all of that. And I don't really feel compelled to not say that now, you know. So my question is since he reached out at the time, you know, and we never violated his confidence in contacting us and all of that. Well, why hasn't he done it since he went to work there? You know, so, you know, we proved what we're about. So, you know, as in most things, the truth comes out. And I think next week is going to be the start of a whole lot of truth coming out, because it's not somebody just making comments, you know, like a whistleblower that spoke to an individual and this is their story. This is actual testimony, under oath, stuff that happened.
I'd be interested in listening to that. Yeah.
Well, tune in. Isn't it next week Jay's going to be on, Rhonda?
Yes, next week, 6 p.m.
All right.
Oh, yeah, that's going to. That's going to be a good show. Any final comments here? We're running out of time here, Diane. I don't want to you know, get you off the radio here if you still have other things. But anything we didn't touch on that you feel you want to get out there, you need to get out there?
I just want to remind the listeners, too, that although it sounded like I got a lot of money, you have to remember that it gets taxed at 35% right off the top. And all of my legal fees are taxable. Even though I've already paid them and I've already paid taxes on them, I get taxed again on getting them back.
Yeah, it's not a tort issue where it's tax-free.
Absolutely. And the biggest thing that we really need is some tort reform so that people can have a level playing field when they go against a government and a government agency. They shouldn't have all the power. And it's gotten to the point where if you're wanting to represent yourself, as dirty as they played during my case, I am fortunate to have had a lawyer, because they even had sanctions against them because they wouldn't listen to the judge. And when the judge ordered them to be somewhere and to be in on a phone conference, they ignored him and they thumbed their noses at him. And so he fined them money.
The VA or your attorney?
The judge fined the VA almost $4,000 just for not being where they were supposed to be and doing what they were supposed to do.
Yeah. Their pocketbook is a little bigger than yours, though, Diane. But when you start talking about your retirement, I know just what you mean, because you worked for that through your whole career, and it sure
goes fast
when you have to use it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on, Ivan.
Well, thank you, Diane. You know, it's great coming. You know, I just hope that you're able to get on and enjoy you know, your family, kids, grandkids, you know, whatever it is.
Yes.
5-year battle legally, let alone it started before that. You know, you certainly, anyone that goes through that is certainly deserving of a better future than what you've been through. That's for certain.
Well, thank you. I intend to. Now my retirement starts.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show here and telling us what occurred here. Anytime you want to check back in, just say hi, call in.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Okay. Have Diane in the blue room. At least it's a bittersweet win, but at least it's over for her.
Yeah.
And she didn't lose,
yeah.
And she got something out of it.
At the same time.
All right. Any final comments?
Yeah. At the same time, it's a typical case of what the VA has been doing. They've got so much power that they think, like, they can't be touched. That has to
change.
Well,
they can't.
They can't.
They
can, but I can't bring up the way they can.
You got regular working people out there that are literally up against a big red machine that has endless supply of money and attorneys.
Yeah.
All right, next week, Jay D'Onofrio, gonna be interesting, gonna be, I can hardly wait. This case is over, they're waiting for the decision to come in, lots of people put under oath, a lot of testimony, we're about to get enlightened on a whole lot of issues having to do with the VA.
Yep.
All right, that's it for me. Rhonda, Ron, over to you guys.
Rhonda?
Thank you, Diane. Have a great night. You know, I know she's not the only VA nurse that's been through this. I actually know a couple more here in Tucson that have, and I'm sure it happens everywhere else. But I'm glad she actually finally got some of her money back because she has to pay her legal fees and all that out of there, too. So.
Yep. Definitely.
I just really wonder how bad some of those patients got hurt that they were playing this game with, you know, because that's all it is a damn game to the financial benefit of others. No, we won't.
No. I'd like to say thank you, Diane. Also, now that you're at this point where you can do this, give your grandkids a hug from the beginning report.
Amen.
Yes.
Other than that, I do have a quotable quote for tonight. It comes from an unknown source.
Trey,
I can get it out if you want.
No.
Right here on the shelf.
I know. It's been there for 4 years and let it stay there.
We have not finished all the rules for proper toilet trash etiquette.
Okay. I know.
This comes from an unknown source. In order to succeed, we must first believe that we can.
Yep.
I'd agree with that.
Yep. That's all I have for tonight. You all have a good night.
Yes. Good night.
Good night from the Gannon Report. See you next week. Jay D'Onofrio coming up. Have a safe weekend. Good night.